to the Development Policy Centre podcast. In this episode, Camilla Burcott interviews Dr. B.T. Slingsby, CEO of Japan's Global Health Innovative Technology Fund.
My name is Camilla Burcott. I'm a research officer at the Development Policy Centre, and it's my pleasure to be sitting down today with Dr. B.T. Slingsby, who heads the Global Health Innovative Technology Fund, or GHIT. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Perhaps we could start off, you could just give us a sort of snapshot. What is GHIT? What do you do?
Yes. GHIT is a public-private partnership fund. It's essentially a fund that drives forward new product development for infectious disease. The products that we fund are going to be drugs, diagnostics, and vaccines for diseases like malaria and tuberculosis and other neglected tropical diseases. These diseases affect almost 3/7, so almost half of our world population, and they actually cause a great deal of suffering, be it in terms of health, in terms of livelihood, in terms of economic suffering. And it takes these innovations going forward to actually control and eliminate these.
Okay. So how would you say, maybe you can give us a sense of, in practice, what you do. So you, as I understand, you have partnership with funding from the Japanese government, from
yes.
Japanese pharma companies, and the Gates Foundation.
And the Wellcome Trust.
And the Wellcome yes. Trust. So what's your model? How does, if somebody's thinking about, say, an MMV or another okay. similar PPP or a PDP?
Yes, yes.
How do you differ? What makes you, or what makes you similar to them?
Sure. Sure. Well, regardless if it's MNV or, it's a university or another PDP or even a company, they're all trying to develop products. If you look at overall drug development in the world these days, Japan as an industry ranks around number 3. Enormous capacities, enormous capabilities, enormous know-how in terms of drug development. And that has really was not being fully utilized for global health. So the idea was how to tap in to the enormous know-how that's in Japan for drug development and bring that innovation technology toward the forefront of global health. And that's precisely what we're doing. What we do is we're a funder. So we facilitate partnerships between Japanese entities and non-Japanese entities. Now, these non-Japanese entities could be PDPs. It could be universities like Monash University. It could be institutions like Weihai. It can be private companies. And so regardless of the institution, that non-Japanese entity would partner then with a Japanese entity. And through that international partnership, it would drive forward product development for these diseases.
Okay, isn't that interesting? Do partners come to you? Do you sort of play the matchmaking role, or do people,
yes.
organizations come to you with...
Both okay. actually. So there's often the term of, are you a hunter or are you a gatherer? And so we do both.
Okay.
We both facilitate partnerships, but we also have open calls in which, partners can come together and apply for funding. So either or, it's fine.
It's good to have that yeah. flexibility, I guess.
Yes, flexibility is key. Flexibility, agility, speed.
All those words that come yes. with innovation.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. And I think that's one of the kind of the fundamental principles behind our management are those types of terms or principles. I mean, if you look that we've been in operations for a little over 2 years, maybe 2.5 years now, and we have a very full portfolio, almost 40 projects in our portfolio, all international partnerships ranging from discovery to preclinical to clinical. We'll have 6 clinical trials ongoing this year throughout the world, regardless if it's South America or Africa or Asia. And I believe that it's true that innovation, we've tapped in to innovation in Japan, and yeah, we're lining it up with global partners.
Oh, that's great. And I'm glad you mentioned sort of, yeah, this trying to tap into this huge knowledge base in Japan. I was curious to ask a little bit more about sort of the origin and the context of the establishment of Jihei. Was that something that was driven by Japanese government, or was it sort of a private sector partners, the pharma kind of waking up to this?
It was timing. I mean, it was both in a sense. I mean, you have many of these large Japanese pharmaceutical companies are increasingly becoming global. They have to become more engaged in global issues. They have to create a more of a global corporate brand. They have to develop their more of a mixed portfolio for the developing world. So the timing was ripe in terms of the private sector. And a lot of champions, primarily the CEOs of these companies, stepped up to the challenge. Likewise, when Prime Minister Abe came into office, he was looking at economic policies that can speed up economic growth in the world, and thus speed up economic growth for Japan. Mm. Meanwhile, he also launched a global health diplomatic policy that really put innovation at its forefront, saying that you know, that innovation is absolutely necessary to increase the level of health of citizens throughout the world, and Japan's role in doing that is driving that forward.
Okay. Yeah.
So both.
There's a lot of mutual benefits, I guess.
Exactly.
Gained. Yeah. So that's great that you're able to sort of capitalize on that timing, and now it sounds like based on the number of projects you've got in the timeline, this becoming a really productive and really fruitful endeavor. I wonder if you could give me a specific example of a project or something that's where you've really seen a lot of success.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, one of our projects is it's a project between one Japanese pharmaceutical company called Takeda in Japan, and an entity, as I think many of your readers or your audience will know, is MMV, Medicines for Malaria Ventures. And they're developing a single-dose cure for malaria. As you know, the current dosing for malaria is not a single-dose cure. So this would increase the adherence and compliance to treatment and make it much, much easier. And that's monumental in terms of how you treat patients in the developing world, is the facility and the easiness of therapeutic regimens. It's also would be be very effective in terms of resistant strands of malaria. And that's actually going on in partnership between those two entities in Peru right now, in terms of a clinical trial, phase two. But it also had, within that same type of partnership, between Takeda and MMV, they've actually worked with researchers here in Australia for non-human primate challenge studies and challenge models. And so it's, you know, on the front you see possibly MMV and Takeda in terms of our investees. This is a lot of our projects actually in collaboration with institutes here in Japan, in Australia. Be it Monash University or be it institutions in Sydney or Keynes, I think that Australia definitely has a powerhouse in terms of infectious disease researchers and in science.
Mm-hmm. And I was interested while you were saying that I noticed that you used the word investees rather than grantees.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that's sort of a deliberate choice of the way that you're thinking about the funding the funds that you're dispersing.
So our management is completely kind of private sector driven. Mm-hmm. All of our review in terms of potential investments looks at it very similar to what a venture capital or a private equity firm or even a pharmaceutical company looks at in terms of projects. We look at management. We look at obviously the science, the applicability of that science in terms of access, in terms of market, in terms of introductory. And we look at the COGS. We set up the agreements with each of our investees in terms of looking at milestones, looking at stage gates. It's very, as our colleague in your government just recently said, it's a ruthless almost in terms of how we allot our investments in terms of the very product development driven, where we're not just investing in research, we're investing in product development. And that's a key fundamental difference between typical research grants and product development investments.
Right. I suppose some people might argue that kind of the flip side, if you take a sort of very business or kind of commercial oriented approach, is then who are these products being developed for?
Yes.
Is it being developed for people who are sort of the poorest of the poor in many cases,
yes,
who are being affected by malaria, TB, and TDs? So I'm curious to know a little bit, how do you manage address issues of accessibility, of making sure that once these products actually are developed and come to the market, how do you have a hand in making sure that they're actually accessible to the people who really need them?
Yes, yes. I mean, the emphasis on kind of private sector driven management is very different than access issues.
Mm.
One is that we call these investments, we manage these as investments. Essentially, as fiscal instruments, they are grants. We don't get equity. We don't get IP. Neither are there loans. So in terms of a fiscal structure or a fiscal instrument, in terms of the type, it is a grant, first of all. Second of all, in terms of those access issues, we have a very firm access policy that says if this product is developed with primarily our funds, then it has to be provided at essentially cost plus a little bit in order to cover pharmacovigilance and internal costs.
Mm-hmm.
Our ideal structure there is looking at a price pattern or a price that is sustainable for the company or for the manufacturer, but the lowest price as possible to be sustainable, which basically means that, at cost plus a few percent. If it is going to be a licensing agreement to other manufacturers for the endemic populations throughout the world, that has to be royalty free. So these are not commercial investments. These are essentially, lack of a better term, public goods as we see them. And we ensure access in that manner. So access is taken very seriously in terms of the review. We look at COGS, accessibility, availability, adoption, affordability. And with that, we try to first is develop accessible products as they, in terms of the specifications of those products. But once they're developed, then in terms of delivering those products, again, we impose accessible conditions on those.
Mm. Just thinking a little bit more broadly, I was interested, obviously there's a lot of people working on malaria, TB. These are sort of some of the big ones. NTDs. Until recently, you've got DNDi, you've got a few organizations working there, but I was sort of interested to see recently, NTDs really seem to be coming up in profile. We saw the Nobel Prize being given to people involved with ivermectin development. We've got NTDs actually included in the SDGs now. Do you think that's sort of going to change maybe the focus of what GHIT's doing a bit more now that NTDs are kind of on the rise?
No.
No.
In terms of GHIF, from the very beginning, we've had a focus on NTDs, neglected tropical diseases, as well as malaria and tuberculosis, as well as HIV/AIDS. For us, these are all neglected diseases. Personally, I prefer not to actually even use the term neglected tropical diseases or neglected diseases. It's kind of an awful term.
Mm.
However, if you look at that term, it's really the communities, the families, the patients, the persons who are inflicted with these diseases, they are being neglected in terms of the wealth of the world, the innovation of the world. And that's what we're trying to do, is bring that innovation and that access to the healthcare to these communities and patients and people.
I guess, yeah, so building on that, the last question that I really have for you is, where do you see GHIT sort of going? How do you see this work evolving over the next few years?
Getting products out there. That's the bottom line. We've had a increasingly robust portfolio in terms of international partnerships driving for product development. And I think that within a few years, you're going to see products come out of the pipeline. With that products, you're going to see greater access to healthcare and obviously an impact on people's lives.
That's encouraging. It's good to hear.
Thank you
very much for taking the time to speak with me. I look forward to following these products as they come out of the pipeline and seeing them make a difference.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a podcast from the Development Policy Centre. For more information on our work, visit our website at devpolicy.anu.edu.au. To join the conversation on Australian aid, Papua New Guinea and the Pacific, and global development policy, visit our blog at devpolicy.org. At the blog, you can also sign up to our newsletter for all the latest updates or connect with us on social media. Thanks for listening.